you remember Rick Tellender used to come on quite a bit. We had a couple of guys that we had on. We had Jeremy Schapp, Dick Schapp, Frank DeFord, and Rick Tellender were kind of the guys and Rick Riley. We had a bunch of those guys on who I thought were not only good writers, but were good radio.
Well, Tellender was kind of ahead of his time. He was a part of that sports writers on TV crew that used to run on WGN.
And then it was syndicated. I think it went for like 15 years. And the whole hook was he was the young guy. You know, he was the young guy of that show.
That's 25 years younger, I think, than just about everybody else on that program.
Yeah, I just remember having Rick on a bunch, and I always enjoyed him. I'm glad we're actually going to get a chance to talk to him.
He's the pride of Peoria, Illinois, the pride of Northwestern University. He's Rick Tellender joining us on the Truist Newsmaker line. Rick, how's that for a lead-in?
That's about as good as it gets.
All right, well, thanks for talking with us. It's not going to get any better. No, thanks for coming on. Your thoughts on watching, as a Chicago guy who was there for a lot of it, The Last Dance, complete to finish?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, listen, maybe we have a different perspective. Obviously, we do here in Chicago. But I think it was just a very dramatic retelling of a story that really, I mean, you know, a special character, point in time. Michael Jordan, obviously, you know, I think back to Atlanta quite a bit. With Dominique Wilkins, you know, the dunk contest with Dominique. A lot of things that happened for Jordan along the way that made him very special and maybe lucky in certain ways. But I think what you saw, what I really liked about the show was the insight into somebody who is, maybe has a lot of flaws, certainly has a lot of flaws. But the desire to win was kind of monumental, and maybe people can take away from this, you know, there's pluses and minuses to being a champion.
I want to ask about the lucky thing in a second, but I think the thing that needed to be done in the very beginning, and it was really telling because we had Michael Wilbon on at the time, and I just remember making a quick note to myself. I'm assuming it was close to factually accurate. An indoor soccer team was outdrawing the Chicago Bulls, so if you want to know where it was coming from, because the story is – it's a great story, but it's even better when you realize what this team had to sort of rise up from to become what they became.
Yeah, you know, the Bulls, they had some moments. There was a time with Norm Van Leer, Jerry Sloan, Chet Walker, Bob Love in the late 70s when they were pretty good, and the old Chicago Stadium was rocking. But then it just it dipped down in the very late 70s and the early 80s. And, you know, the NBA was up and down all across the country. Nobody was certain if it was going to take off and be that huge third league after baseball and football. It just wasn't certain. It was still a relatively undeveloped game. You know, it really didn't even start until the 50s. Pro basketball, I guess it was around in the 40s, but the 50s, you know, whereas baseball had started pretty seriously back in the late 1800s. So you're going a long ways with that. Of course, football is the American game. But Michael Jordan came along at a time before cell phones. At the very end, they were there. But before that, before all the social media stuff, one thing you know is people are looking straight ahead. They're looking at him always. Wherever he is, he's the center of attention. They're not looking at their phones. You know, they don't have those bent necks you see now. Everybody's doing something else. They're either taking a photo of you or they're looking at their phone. Now they're actually engaging with that person. And, you know, that to me is striking. Wasn't that long ago? But, boy, was that a different time.
Rick Tellender with us from the Chicago Sun-Times. Looking back to when he was the third overall pick in the NBA draft, obviously winning the Olympics, hitting the shot to win the national title, what were the realistic expectations? What did people think they were going to see from Michael Jordan, if you could look back?
Well, they certainly didn't think they were going to see this. He was 6'6". At that time, the league was still pretty much dominated by big men. Tall men could, you know, hook, skyhook Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain. They could dunk. You know, Magic Johnson had come along. He was an anomaly, a 6'9", almost like point guard. So Michael Jordan was a two guard, technically. That's what although he just played basketball. He's a basketball player. And it had been said no championship had ever been won being led by a two guard, not a point guard, not a power forward, not a center. And I think he showed what a great athlete can do with this game. So nobody was expecting this. They knew he was good. I had seen him in the Olympics in 1984 out in Los Angeles. And, you know, they just smoked everybody. I mean, they were beating teams by 40 and 50 points. So it was kind of ridiculous to really project what he was doing there. He'd been really, really good at North Carolina. But Dean Smith has a system that kind of represses individuality for the team game. And then all of a sudden he gets to the pro game, and it suited him. This the ability to go one-on-one, the ability to just score off the dribble, to go left or right. Back then, you couldn't play zones or anything like that. So it was man-to-man. You could double-team. But when it's man-to-man, Michael Jordan's going to kill you. He's going to eat you up. And we saw that, and all of a sudden it's like, my God, who is this guy? I mean, you know, Clyde Drexler was good. He was in the league. He's a comparable player. But Michael Jordan was so good and did such things that the buzz was out immediately. You got to come and see this guy. You got to come to the stadium. You got to watch this guy, Michael Jordan.
Are you surprised that eventually he said yes to this? Now, we know that he had control, and I guess that's a bone of contention for some people. I thought it was going to be worse. When I heard that Michael was nervous that he could look bad, we had the director on before the whole thing even started. And I said, wow, they must have some footage. When I watched it, I was like, nothing I didn't expect. As a matter of fact, I thought it was going to be worse.
You mean the berating,
the bullying, the stuff that Michael said he didn't want the world to see. I thought it was pretty tame.
Well, you know, it was pretty tame, but maybe it's just they got the X-rated stuff out of there. But it certainly came across. If you saw his Hall of Fame speech.
Well, that was the moment that I thought was worse than anything in this documentary, whatever the hell this thing is.
Yeah, well, it just shows you. Michael Jordan is this very handsome man, his spectacular physique. When he smiles, when he's in a suit, it's just amazing. But inside of this guy is this competitive, nasty killer. He doesn't freeze up in the moment. He rises to the moment. A lot of people choke or gag or whatever. He can't wait for that. And if you slight him in any way, we all knew this, he will create you, he will turn you into that evil monster that he has to slay, even if it's only in his mind. I mean, he wanted to destroy LeBradford Smith. Is there anybody on the planet who even remembers that guy? He had a great game. He had 137-point game. Everybody in the NBA is capable of having a great game. They're all great players. But to Jordan and his pride, I think that's what you see in this. His pride is uncontrollable. And his skill was so great that if he didn't see it in you, he was going to be cruel, mean to you, and drive you. Some guys, you know, it's very interesting. I remember when he slugged Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr is 6'3", and not very physically, you know, he's not a physical specimen in any way. And he downplays everything about himself. He's very modest. First of all, this guy was a great player, great three-point shooter. I think he still holds a league record for percentage, career percentage. Second of all, he is tough. He's mean. His father was killed, too, just like Michael Jordan's father. His father was killed in Beirut when he was a professor over there. Steve, you know, I remember when he played at Arizona, and teams would chant stuff about his dad. It was just terrible. This guy was one tough cookie. He stood up to Jordan. Not many other guys did because they were just amazed and kind of, they backed off from his bullying. But Steve didn't. Kurt didn't. And that was the year they went 72-10 that year. They just annihilated people. They probably could have gone 76-6 that year, I think pretty easily. They stepped off the gas in a couple of games. But, I don't know. That's for people to decide. Would you want a teammate like Michael Jordan? Would you want to win with a guy like that, pushing you, goading you, ridiculing you, the things he did to Jerry Krause? They used to throw stuff at Krause from the back of the bus. This is their general manager. I don't know. That's the question. It's up for everybody to decide. And Michael makes no apologies. He's not forgiving. He doesn't forget anything, any slight. He actually starts to cry in one of those episodes because he's trying to express to people, yeah, what don't you get? I want to win, and this is what I have to do to win. And it's for the first time I ever saw him actually lose it because he's just can't get it through people's head. I'm sorry. If you don't get out there to win like me. There's something wrong with you, not me. And that's when he says break and walks off camera. A very telling point, but I don't know. That's up for grabs. Everybody make their own decision about him.
Rick Tallender with us from the Chicago Sun-Times on the Truist Newsmaker line. You brought up Jerry Krause, not a sympathetic figure in this series, and maybe he never will be seen as that, but do people, as time goes by in Chicago, have more of a respect for Jerry Krause and the team, aside from Michael, that he put together?
Yeah, you have to. Listen, I wrote a story about Krause, and a long story in Sports Illustrated in 1993 called The Sleuth. I hadn't read it in 20 years, at least, and I read it yesterday, and it pretty much tells you everything about this guy. I mean, everything. And he is very cocksure in his ability to be able to discern athletic talent, whether it be it baseball or basketball, better than anybody on the planet. And he believes that. And he was as obsessive about it as Michael Jordan was as obsessive about winning on the floor. And in certain ways, these two guys, in a very, very odd way, this short little, not very good looking, overweight white guy, and Michael Jordan, this magnificent black athlete, were both come around to being sort of similar. And the friction between the two was there. There was not room for both of them on that, on that boat. It's like somebody's going to get off. So it's a very interesting thing. Man, they booed him at the celebration in 1998 at Grant Park.
They sure did.
Yeah, and they booed him every time his name was ever mentioned at the United Center. Because, listen, my hero's enemy is my enemy. And that's kind of how it went. Jerry couldn't get out of his own way. If he had, he would be absolutely beloved. If he were jovial, if he made jokes about himself, if he didn't sit in the first seat on the bus, if he wasn't physically so different, if he just stayed out of the locker room, if he just did all the things that a general manager does, he'd go down in history as one of the greatest of all time and possibly one of the most beloved.
Rick Tallender, a longtime TV guy and writer, obviously based out of Chicago, who was there for this whole thing, this thing being the main subjects of The Last Dance. When Jordan hits a shot and it's okay, if we're really going to go away, Scotty calls it The Last Dance in Grant Park. So everybody knew that this wasn't a fabricated title. This is what they were going for. I don't know if they could have gotten up to win a seventh in a row with everything they had gone through and then trying to figure it out and patch it all together. I don't know that. When you heard he was coming back, though, when you knew that Phil Jackson was going to go back to coaching, I know the great ones believe they're going to do it wherever it is they land, but do you remember your feeling when you heard Michael's going to play for the Washington Wizards? Do you remember when you heard Phil Jackson's going to coach again in the NBA? Why don't these guys just leave Perfect alone?
Yeah, it's always sad when one of your heroes goes on and kind of taints their legacy. We would like people to do what they do, hit the peak, and then disappear. You know, in ancient mythology, that character would just go off to Valhalla or heaven or somewhere. But they don't come back just to live with mortal people. And we believe in that myth. And when the Bulls reached that summit, it was when Michael came back. Everything he's done since, the only thing he's really good at is playing golf for fun. He did the one thing on this planet that he's better than any other human. And I wish, looking back, wish he hadn't. I wish that last shot in Utah where he held his arm out for an extra 2 seconds after he stole the ball from Karl Malone, which, by the way, was a great steal. He not only slaps the ball away, but then his hand is so quick, he hits it again, and it goes between Malone's legs, and Jordan gets it and scores that last basket. And I wish he could have walked off right there. But you know what? That's not the real world. Look at Ali. Look at everybody, almost everybody, who hits the peak. They don't go gently into the good night. They fade away. And they show Willie Mays. I mean, it goes on and on and on, the great athletes who you just saw at the end when they weren't very good. I remember Joe Namath at the end of his career, and it's like, oh, my God, not even good enough to start, really. And he was out with the Los Angeles Rams, not even with the New York Jets. We forget about all the baseball players, where they end up the last couple of years of their careers. They might go to five different teams. And we just kind of, we like to forget that. I wish we could forget the Wizards thing, and I wish we could forget that Michael owns a basketball team. You know, people forget, what does this guy do? I don't see him doing much with that team. And the Charlotte, you know, whatever they are, Hornets, Bobcats, whatever, they're certainly not very good. So he's not good at that either. He's not good at Krause's game. How about that for irony? So, yeah, you know, Michael's Michael. And one of his sons, I think, kind of implied, I think it was in maybe in the Sun-Times, one of our writers did an interview with Marcus Jordan, and he said, yeah, my dad plays like 45 holes of golf a day or something. He just does. He smokes his cigars, drinks his bourbon, plays golf, plays cards at night probably, you know, BS's with the guys, with his inner group, and, you know, that's MJ. He's not out there saving the world, that's for sure.
Rick Tellender, we appreciate the time. Hopefully we can talk again in the not-too-distant future. Stay safe.
I appreciate it. Take care.
Rick Tellender on the Truist Newsmaker line talking about The Last Dance.